Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Enjoy a tall, cool dude.
What is this? What are we doing? What in God's name are we doing? Look, our lives. What kind of lives are these? We're like children. We're not men.
No, we're not. We're not men.
It's the Nightcap.
Are we going to be sitting here when we're 60 like two idiots?
We should be having dinner with our sons when we're 60.
We're pathetic. You know that?
Yeah, like I don't know that I'm pathetic.
On WGR, Sports Radio 550.
So then you asked yourselves, isn't there something more to life?
Yes.
Yeah, well, let me clue you in on something.
There isn't.
Sorry, hold on. Doing some quick math here. All right, I got to figure it out. Hey, it's the Nightcap. Joe DiBiase here on WGR. Just me tonight. Brendan Keeney from WBEN. He's been hanging out more often. You know, to have someone to chat with. It's nice to have him. But he's off doing other things tonight. That's fine, of course. And we're going to have to figure out a way to talk about the Sabres again. It's hard for me to, like, he asked me earlier, it's like, okay, what are you going to talk about tonight? And I'm thinking to myself, like, I have no problem. Like, I can go on about the Sabres. I can go on and on about the Sabres. But has there been anything that hasn't been said about this team so far? Like, I could sit here and try to make an argument for, like, they should trade Sam Reinhart. But this is dumb. Like, you're going too far at that point. Like, everything that's needed to be said has been said about the Sabres. Right? Trading Ristolainen. The jerseys. Switching to Royal Blue. I mean, specifically. The GM not making trades. You know, the blue line, having all these defensemen, too many defensemen, this trade we all want to happen with Winnipeg that's been sitting out there for 10 months. You know? It's been said. But that's what makes it all the more frustrating. That's what makes everything that's going on right now with the Sabres even more infuriating, is we all just go round and round and round with what the issues are, and the solutions, or there's no change, really. There's no change to make us think that anything's going to be different. That is what makes this season as infuriating as it's been. It's a Nightcap with Joe DiBiase, by the way, if I didn't say that. 803-0550 is the phone number. Looking for your calls all throughout the night. Interview of the day will be Ralph Krueger. We'll hear from him a little bit later on. He was on with Howard and Jeremy this morning. I actually thought Krueger was pretty good. I thought he owned up to their poor play as of late. He took accountability for it. He didn't let the players slide by. Like, he didn't call anybody out by name, of course. But Krueger is sounding like he knows that this team is just not getting the job done, and that this team maybe is not capable of getting the job done. So we'll hear from him a little bit later on. We'll hear a little bit from Darren Dreger along the way as well. TSN Hockey Insider was on the station earlier as well. The math I was doing getting the show going here just before, I was looking at the Cap Friendly page. Generally, when I start the show here, I've got a couple of different tabs open. I've got the Sabres Hockey Reference page open in case I need to go to any sort of stats right away on the season for them. And I've got the Cap Friendly page open. I'm looking at contracts and such. I don't really have the standings open anymore, which is sad because here we go again. Year 9 in a row, 8 in a row, I guess. They were in the race that first year of the drought. But 8 years in a row where it's February 5th, and I'm not opening the standing page. Like, whatever. Unless I'm looking back, if I'm looking behind me, if I'm looking how high I can get in the draft order, I'm going to tankathon.com now, I guess I should be. But the Cap Friendly page, I'm looking, and it's been talked about repeatedly in the last week or so. A little bit, even longer than that. Why isn't anything happening? Oh, well, look ahead. Look to the offseason. All of this money is coming free. $4.3 million from Frolik, gone. $3 million from Sherry, off the books. $2.275 for Jimmy Vesey. $2 million for Evan Rodriguez. $1.6 million for Girgensons. Another $1.5 million for Johan Larson. $5.1 million comes free from Zach Bogosian becoming a free agent. All of this money. They are right up against the cap right now, which maybe even makes this more frustrating. Because it's not like they're a good team or anything, but you look at the list of teams like right against the cap, it's like, oh, it's Toronto, it's Boston, oh, and there's the Sabres. There they are. Joined with the best teams in the league in terms of money spent, but they're the one team that's just not even, they're nowhere. And I'm looking at all of these free agents and all of this money that's being talked about. $33 million will be available for the Sabres this coming offseason. And I've kind of wanted to just roll my eyes at it and dismiss it. Because this GM, to his credit, he has come out this year and said that he knows they need to acquire a forward, that he's trying to make that type of deal that he knows. I mean, in October, November maybe it was, he said in front of the media, we are looking to acquire a forward. He said it. But wanting to do something and getting it done are not the same thing. If it meant overpaying for a forward to prevent the season from getting away from you, so be it. Because the inactivity couldn't happen again, but it has. So I've wanted to roll my eyes at the point about all of the money becoming available because the GM's been so inactive all season. But then, once you start to think about who the guys are, Frolik, Sherry, Vesey, Girgensons, Larson, Bogosian, I should throw Sobotka in the mix. In fact, I should. In fact, my math is off now. I'm going to have to delete a tweet because my math is a little bit off because I forgot Vladimir Sobotka is a free agent coming up, but he's currently in IR. 16 games played, one goal for him. So, doing some more real quick math in my head right now. If you add Sobotka's production into all the other UFAs, the upcoming UFAs for the Sabres, 29 goals combined in 239 games. Listen to that again. That's half their forward group. That is 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 forwards. 239 man games played. 29 goals? That's embarrassing. And there is reason to be hopeful that once those guys are gone, the replacement level players, even if they're AHL guys, will give you more than that. But I also, you have to look at those players. And, you know, like Botterill, I think the defense of Botterill, if you were going to present me a case for why this season's not Jason Botterill's fault, it would be he's trying to make trades, right? He is. He's trying to make trades. But my problem with this season and the roster and the staleness of the roster goes back to the summer. He did not have to sign Zemgus Girgensons and Johan Larson. He didn't. He did not have to have Zach Bogosian on the NHL roster. He did not have to have Vladimir Sobotka on the NHL roster. He did not have to keep Connor Sherry around for another season. And this doesn't add to the staleness point, but it's another struggling forward. Jimmy Vesey is his guy. He brought him in. Other than Bogosian, he brought in Sherry. He brought in Vesey. He re-signed Girgensons. He re-signed Larson. The guys that are struggling, the guys that he's talking about yesterday with Chopin the Bulldog wanting more production from, are his guys. And that's what's worrisome for me. Because all of these guys I'm mentioning here, none of them create on their own. You could look at VC and think, oh, he averages 17 goals. And you could look at Connor Sherry, he's got a couple of 20-goal seasons under his belt. And you could think, all right, those guys are going to come here. That's going to be my upgraded goal scoring, right? That's how I'm going to get better. That's how I'm going to get more goals. But when you think about what they are as players, VC and Sherry more specifically here, because Larson and Girgensons are more role players, and honestly, Girgensons is having a very good season goal scoring wise. 9 goals for him through this far in the season. Like, that's a good season for him. I'm not going to criticize him on this front. But the Sherry and VC part of it, the guys that Botchero multiple times now has talked about, we need more production from. They don't create on their own. And if you do not have a centerman capable of getting the puck out to them that they can play off of, if you don't have a creator to go with them, their production is not going to be there. It's going to be non-existent. Connor Sherry had a couple of nice seasons. He did it with Sidney Crosby. Jimmy VC had a couple of nice seasons for the New York Rangers. Played a lot with Mika Zibanejad, who, again, not a superstar. He's not Crosby. It's a legit top six center. Those guys, you know, they're playing with Larson. They're playing with Asplund. They're playing with a Casey Mittelstadt that should not have been in the NHL this season. At best, they're playing with Marcus Johansson, a winger playing out of position and forward. And on a whole nother level is Skinner. Skinner is getting some criticism, for sure. And, you know, mostly deserved. You look on the surface and you could say, oh, 11 goals and 8 assists. I just gave him a $9 million a year contract. And he's got 19 points, and it's February. Did he have 30 goals by this point last season? So it's very easy to look at the Skinner season and think that's a big reason that it's not working either. But again, I don't need Jack Eichel playing with Jeff Skinner. I don't. But you've got to give him a creator because he's better than Sherry and VC, no doubt. And he's better at creating on his own. But if you want him to produce for you, you have to know what you're looking at. You have to know what type of player he is. You have to know what you have. He's not a guy that's going to go out there and put up 80 points. He's not going to have 45, 50 assists. He's not going to get other players on his line that aren't as good as him to produce. That's not who Jeff Skinner is. He's never been that. To think he was going to be that player for you would have been insane. And to think that he would have done any better when he's been playing with the players he's played this season would have been crazy. Marcus Johansson's not a bad player. I've not minded him at center this season. I really haven't. They need to do a lot better of what their second line center is, but I've not minded him. His career average points, like, he's not too far off that pace. He's playing fine. He's not doing all that well in the defensive end. So that's going to take some getting used to, if he can even get used to it. But on the offensive end of it, this is what Marcus Johansson is. He's got 22 points in 46 games. He's like a 40-point player. Right on pace for that. What else has Skinner had to work with? More than a third of his ice time this season came with Vladimir Sobotka. I mean, my goodness. That's the worst offensive player they've dressed all season. And I think I could throw defensemen in there, too. I really can. The guy he was a zero threat to do anything in the offensive end. And by the way, he only played 16 games. And if you look at who Jeff Skinner's played with this season, 31% of his ice time this year with Vladimir Sobotka. What do you expect him to do? So yeah, like, in a way, I am coming to the defense of Jeff Skinner right now in this. Because I think the position he's been put in has been completely unfair to expect 30, 40 goals from him. It just wasn't going to happen. And with Olofsson out, I would like to see him with Jack Eichel, no doubt. But I get why Ralph Kruger just can't afford to do that when Victor Olofsson's in the lineup. He's got to have some other lines get going. And Skinner, like, he's, again, it's not really working out, but do you have a better idea? 5-on-5 goal production. Skinner's actually above his career pace, by the way. The struggles he's had has not been even strength. He's third on the team in even strength goals. He has 11. It's not nearly as good as it was last year, but it's right on his career pace. And to be fair, in Carolina, he didn't have Jack Eichel, but the centers he was playing with in Carolina was, and the lines he was playing on in Carolina, were better than what he's had this season. Like Jordan Staal, he's all right. He's pretty good. Second line center. Victor Rask, you know, second, third line center, but like a 40-point guy. He would be on some real lines. He just hasn't had that this year. And the power play is really the, like, you can certainly go after him on the power play numbers. You can't have 0 goals and 3 assists on the power play. Like, that you can't have that. 3 points all year on the power play from Jeff Skinner. He's not the issue. And that's why I look at the GM. Because there was an entire summer. There was a trade deadline last year. They needed to figure out a better plan to replace O'Reilly from the get-go. 2 summers, to be honest. When is the O'Reilly trade? That is, what, July 1st, 2018? We are a year and a half removed from that. At some point, you've got to get that done. You've got to do a better job replacing that guy. Mittelstadt and Berglund, it didn't work. What have you done since? You've had 2 off-seasons and a whole season last year and another half a season this year. And the best you could come up with was Marcus Johansson, a winger. That's the best you could come up with. Guys have been traded. Michael Granlund went from Minnesota to Nashville. Like, he was traded. That's as good a second-line center as you are going to find. Why weren't you in on that? Jean-Gabriel Pageau maybe is going to get traded this trade deadline. Like, will they be in on that? How can I have confidence that anybody that gets traded, that they're going to be in on it? Because I've got a year and a half of track record now that tells me that the GM and the organization has not been aggressive enough to replace that position. And so many of their issues start with their lack of center depth. It's the most important position, and they have one guy that can create offense at that position. That's it. I really like the idea of Jack Roslovich. Like, I hate to keep bringing up I said at the top of the show, there's only so many ways you can talk about this team right now. Because we keep going round and round and round talking about the same stuff. Well, that's because nothing's changing. But we got to revisit the Winnipeg thing. It's amazing to me that trade hasn't happened. That there hasn't been a trade with Winnipeg and anybody. It doesn't have to be the Sabres. Neil Pionk is still playing 24 minutes a night for them. The guy was a throw-in to a bigger trade last offseason. Someone named Tucker Poolman is still playing 18 minutes a night for them. And Buffalo's not coming back now. And there's Jack Roslovich sitting there. Pretty good player. Pretty good young player who continually does not get the ice time that he deserves because of what's above him in the Winnipeg lineup. And he asked for a trade last offseason. So, I don't know what the Jets are doing. I don't know what the Sabres are doing. But at least on paper, there isn't a deal in the league that makes more sense. The Sabres have way too many defensemen. Winnipeg needs defensemen badly. They're still in the playoff race. They're only 3 points back. And they have a forward, a disgruntled young forward, who's looking for an opportunity to play. Pick a spot in the NHL and tell me, you go ahead and try to tell me that that spot is better for a disgruntled young center who wants more ice time than this team right here, right now. You could plop him right on the second line with Jeff Skinner, play him 18 minutes a night. He's going to be the happiest guy in the world. He goes from 13 minutes a night playing on Winnipeg's fourth line to playing with Jeff Skinner, and maybe you bump Marcus Johansson to the right wing now. All of a sudden, hey, a lot of issues just got fixed because Skinner's numbers would go up immediately. Your power play production would probably go up. You would push guys further down the lineup who shouldn't be in bigger roles. like Larson. And maybe you get something out of Evan Rodriguez. I don't know. But a move that makes that much sense. It hasn't happened yet. And that's where we're at. It hasn't happened yet. But this team, you need the fan base needs a pulse. They need a sign that they're not just waiting around hoping that these same old guys are going to just suddenly become something that they're not. And the trade deadline is in 19 days. The one thing I just really, really hope doesn't happen, and what they cannot afford to have happen, not just for their on-ice product, but for the sanity of the fan base right now. If a good centerman, a good young centerman, like a Jack Roslovich, it doesn't have to be him, but a good young centerman like that, or even a top six forward, becomes available and gets traded, and you weren't in on that, or you didn't get that done, well, now the excuse of nobody's getting traded, GMs just aren't looking to deal, that's gone. That's out the window. And then there's going to be a big problem. Then people are really going to start calling for the GM's head. I'm not there yet, because I would like to see what they do leading up to the trade deadline when deals actually do get made. But there is no doubt, no one would argue this, but there's no doubt the pressure is on Jason Botterill right now to upgrade that forward group, because they're going to have to replace half of it for next season. And can you get me more than 29 goals in 239 games? 803-0550 is the phone number. We'll hear from Ralph Krueger this hour, so stay tuned for that. We'll take your calls after the break, though. We've got actually a bunch of phone lines open, too. So if you're looking to get in on it, we've got spots for you. And yeah, we'll keep going. It's the Nightcap with Jody Biasi. Stay tuned.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify has got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Welcome back. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR. 803-0550 is the phone number. Talking Sabres. They lost 6-1 against the Avalanche last night. An empty building heading into the third period. A jersey thrown on the ice. It was about as dark a game that you're going to get. Just when you think it can't get any lower. A performance like last night, an atmosphere like last night, this team has it. This has got to be rock bottom. This has got to be what rock bottom feels like. Longest playoff drought in the league. One of the worst playoff droughts, by the way, in the league's history. And they can't even come close. The last time they were really in a real race was the first year of this playoff drought, when Thomas Vanek was still leading this team in scoring. When Derrick Roy was still on this team. It was like the last big run by that core. They had made the playoffs 2 years in a row. They had gotten off to a poor start. They were trying to replicate what they had done the year before. This is the 2011-2012 season. I think I'm remembering here. They were trying to replicate what they did in 2011, and they came just short. There was like a game late in the season where Robin Regier got turned around by Jaromir Jagr, maybe, in Philly, and that kind of ended it. It was like maybe 2-3 games left in the season when they got eliminated. And since then, you haven't even been in a race. The closest thing you can get is Bielsma's first year, I want to say. I think Bielsma's first year. Where they're going into the bye week, they win against Chicago at home in an afternoon game, and they're 1 point back. And that might even have been like in March. But by the time they returned on their bye week, it was like 6 or 7 points. So it wasn't even real. They had just played more games than everybody. So they haven't been in a real race in 8 years. And last night you saw people are just, they're fed up. They're fed up. You can buy a ticket on the secondary market right now for less money than it costs to buy a piece of pizza in the arena. Parking is more expensive than your ticket. That's where we've arrived with this team. That's where the fan base has arrived with this team. All right, interview of the daytime. Let's get to Ralph Krueger, who, I'll give him credit, does a very good job of trying to put a positive spin on what's going on. Because that's the toughest job in sports right now, is trying to talk positively about this franchise, this team right now. But Krueger did a pretty good job. So let's get to the head coach. Here he is with Howard and Jeremy earlier today. Is our interview of the day.
On our Western Hotline is Ralph Krueger joining us right now. Ralph, it's Howard and Jeremy. Good morning. Thanks for coming on with us, first of all.
Good morning, Howard and Jeremy.
Ralph, 2-1 after one last night, and then the wheels fell off. What happened in the second period?
Well, there's no question that that we had 20 of the most disappointing minutes of our season. From the 13th minute of the first period right through, taking six goals in a 20-minute period is not acceptable. And, you know, there were individual breakdowns right through it. We're actually just going through it right now in the coach's room. Lots of situations that we can learn from. But, you know, our frustration is there, and we're going to work with it, and we're going to do all we can to improve from this disappointment.
Ralph, at different times in the season, you've had different things that have hurt you. When it was the power play, you know, you told us that when you're seeing good things from it, when, you know, it's operating well, but it's not scoring, that's not a major concern. Last night's game, you know, I think the if you're going back to the tape, the numbers would suggest that, you know, chances, high danger chances, it was not a 6-1 blowout in that department. It was fairly even. So even inside of a 20-minute period where you say it might have been your worst 20 minutes of the season, it seemed to me that chances were even. It's just that goals were going in on one end.
Yeah, I mean, we had a 13-13 shot clock at the halfway mark of the game, and it was just every time they went down, they're lethal. Colorado's one of the better teams in the league, and you give them any spaces, they use it, and we certainly didn't. You know, we came out of the starting blocks with a 7-1 shot total, and we didn't have a goal to show for it, so it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't help you if you don't take advantage of a good start. And once they got that momentum going, it seemed like the 3-1 goal early in the second period, we went way too high risk on our toes. We didn't stay calm like we have been in the past, with only being down 2 and trying patiently to get ourselves back into the game. We threw the whole house at them and gave up completely on our defensive game, and they punished us for it, you know, and it was just not the way we needed to manage the game. But again, the job of coaches is to get up in the morning, look for what we can do to strengthen ourselves. We've got no time to feel sorry for ourselves in the NHL. We all know we're back at it against Detroit tomorrow, and that's what we have to do here.
How much of a setback do you think was last night for Carter Hutton? You know, he'd gone through the losing streak, and he's trying to get his confidence back, get a couple wins against Montreal and Columbus, and he's chased last night. Again, I know it's not all his fault, but at the very least, he just couldn't bail out when there were breakdowns in front of him. He couldn't bail the team out. So what was last night in terms of, do you think, affecting his confidence going forward?
Well, you know, guys, he's a very confident player. He's an experienced player, and you know, he'll just go back to work here today. I mean, it's and he takes responsibility when I go by him after we made the goalie change. He's the most critical of himself, and we move him forward again too, and need to work with him. And he's once again somebody who can put this in the right place and get his feet back up, and he'll stand up tall again today.
Do you envision Johansson getting a start down the stretch here? You got a bunch of games coming up. You got back-to-backs Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, we have a lot of bodies out, as you know, right now. Quite a few guys in IR, and then we're going through the tapes of last night. We're going to, you know, we've got the back-to-back, like you said, going up here against Detroit, the Rangers. For sure, Johansson will get a start here somewhere. We're just going to, you know, kind of weed through all the information here before we make our decision. We still need to see who will be getting back. We hope to get one or two guys back, maybe from the injury list, and then we'll mix the cards. But Johansson will be getting a start here in the next few games.
What'd you in the small sample size when he got in last night? What'd you think from him? What'd you see from him? I guess
we really liked the way he came in. You know, he was. He ended up eating one off a 2-on-1 early. It was an unbelievable shot that he really didn't have a chance on the short side, and we thought he settled in nicely and showed a very calm first performance, and made some nice plays with the puck too, which you know, for European goalies coming over to North America is always a skill set they don't really start learning properly till they're over here. So with and without the puck, and his size, his positioning takes away a lot of the net. There weren't a lot of holes in his game, and there were some good scoring chances in the third as we were trying to force some opportunities at the other end to give our fans something to cheer about going home. And we thought overall it was a really good performance from him, and you know, probably the one positive that we all need to take out of last night would have been his performance.
Ralph, I'm curious, you're very much, you know, positive reinforcement and all that in terms of your attitude as a coach with your players. What do you do? You look at the standings this morning. You're, I think, 11 out of third and 12 out of the number 2 wild card. Coming out of the break, it's now 3 out of 4 losses. When you looked at the schedule and thought, okay, maybe they can win a whole bunch of home games here. What do you do as a coach or a coaching staff to keep the players focused, to make sure that the adversity doesn't lead to the attitudes becoming really bad and it just snowballs?
That's a really good question. And we understand the reality. Trust me, guys. It's what you're saying, all those facts. We know the facts. We look them in the eyes and need to be realistic about our situation. And once we've looked at it, we need to move forward again and teach and coach and work with these guys to continue to evolve our game. We are going in and out of it since the break. The Columbus game was an excellent performance right through, and all that was missing really was a little more offense possibly, but we left that game again last night, especially for that stretch in the second period. I thought in the first, like you already said, it was a pretty even game. We deserted our game for about 10 minutes, and I was at least pleased with the guys coming up in the third period with a pretty even match, trying to get ourselves ready for Detroit. And you know, what we need to do is keep the picture small right now. We have very many young, exciting players, and we cannot forget that there is some real value in the core of our team here, and some elite players who need coaching and need developing, and also with this pain and in this time, they need that. And that's our job as coaches, is to keep them in that space without letting them avoid the reality of the situation. We have to let the pain come into our room. We have to look at it. We have to try and understand it. But then again, we have to work with it now and continue to teach these guys, continue to learn to become a team that wins 2 out of 3 games in the National Hockey League. That's what you have to do to be in the race, to be a playoff team. And we will continue to do all we can to get back to that pace.
It's hard to do, though, because like you said, at the top of the answer, you'd mention, you're all well aware of the standings. And I would think it's human nature. You can talk about it. Jason Botchel has mentioned to our afternoon guys, the whole small picture, 2 out of 3. But it's human nature as a player to understand the bigger picture. And the bigger picture is it's not a pretty picture.
And I would just add to that, Ralph, I would feel like it's important. You'd want them to know where they stand in the big picture within the rest of the league. If you're not looking out enough, are you looking in too much?
Well, no, we know that every day. I mean, our key players and I am speaking to the media every day, and it's quite clear that everybody in our environments is reminding us of that, guys. And that's everybody's job. Trust me, that's fine. We have to be able to take that, because when the good times are here, we need to be able to deal with that properly. And when the tough times are there, they're there to test our character. They're there to test our resolve. And listen, guys, everybody in this room knows what's going on here. We're not hiding from that. But the other thing we know is that we do have a youthful core, that we do have players with still upside potential that's exciting, and that we maybe don't have everything in line right now to be consistently that 2 or 3 team, but we're going to work to be that. And I do see growth here. I do see development. I do see character here, and I do see a lot of guys working very, very hard at improving on a daily basis. And in the end, that's all you can do when you have adverse situations, is take care of what's in your control. And we're going to continue to do that. We're not going to let our guards down there, and we're going to work hard to have our fans proud of the work ethic and the game that we're playing, which they aren't right now. And only we, with our work and what we do on the ice, beginning with Detroit tomorrow, can get that back.
Yeah, Jeff Skinner, I want to ask you about him before we let you go, Ralph. No goals now in 15 games. When you have a guy like that who is an NHL goal scorer and he's in a drought like this, do you talk to him? Do you let him? Do you stay away? He's got enough pressure. Let him work it out. What do you do? Because, obviously your team needs production from a number of veteran players. He's one of a handful of guys. But what do you do when a guy like him is in a drought like this?
No, our secondary scoring definitely needs to ignite. And we work with him. Donnie Granato being more in charge of the forwards and myself. Working also primarily in the game with the forwards while Steve Smith's doing the D. We do use video footage. We have one-on-one meetings. We're permanently communicating with all the players. And in a situation like Jeff's, we're working together with him to try to find that pass back, because we know he's a streaky scorer. And once he gets going here, he can really help us to turn the energy here and turn the results. We're working on that daily together and trying to find the right pass for him. He was on the first power play yesterday for those 2 power plays we had. And there's other ways. He was double shifting at times yesterday, jumping in with Asplund and D, and just trying to get that first goal. I'm sure once we get the first one, we'll get more. But it's a permanent coaching process going on here.
And I last thing, because I think you mentioned it earlier, you were talking about maybe getting some guys back. So we're talking like that's the Dahlin, Lazar, Larson group, I assume?
Yeah, those three are all candidates short term. We see Olofsson developing in a good way. He's still a few games away, excited and looking forward to getting him back. And Okpozo, who's just such an important player in person for us in the group. We hope that his injury stays in a couple of weeks versus longer than that. So we'll see there. We're hoping to at least get 2 of those bodies back by the game tomorrow.
You said a few games for Olofsson. Is there a time frame of when you might be back on the practice ice at this point?
Yeah, we're hoping to see him in practice next week. But again, that's he is on course for that right now. But let's see how these next 4 or 5 days go with these lower body injury, the type that he has. You just got to listen to the body. But we're optimistic on him and he's very hungry to get back into our lineup.
All right, Ralph, thanks as always for your time. Appreciate you coming on with us this morning, and good luck tomorrow night against the Red Wings.
Yeah, thanks, guys, for a fair conversation on a tough morning. And for our Sabre fans out there, the only thing I can say is we're back at work here today, and you know, we appreciate the support. There was a lot of people still in the building there yesterday, right to the end, and we can feel that passion, and we're going to do all we can to repay it.
All right, very good. Thanks, Ralph.
Thanks, guys.
You bet.
Okay, bye-bye.
Have a good day.
There is Ralph Krueger with Howard and Jeremy. You can hear in his voice in his own way, he's acknowledging that he knows the fan base is angry. I think when he says we feel the fans' passion at this time, in this moment, he understands that passion, and that means frustration. I think he's smart enough to get that. I think that's what he means there. Anyways, good stuff from him as always. We'll hear from Darren Dreger in the second hour at some point, a little bit from him. A Bills potential free agent target, though, that is no longer on the market. Not Greg Olsen. We'll talk about him a little bit maybe in the second hour. But another guy that I really like the idea of, maybe more than anyone, he's probably my number one free agent target for the Bills. Report from about an hour ago that might make it feel like that's not all that possible. I'll let you know with some more details on that when we return. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
You watch a movie and it's like watching the Titanic, and you hope the ship just don't sink, and for some reason the ship just keeps sinking over and over. And you know, you go back and you watch the game, you just hope that you know, all the plays that we left out there, and you know, the possible opportunities, you know, that we could have came out victorious, but we didn't, and that's the reality. And so now we got to move on and look forward to next year and this offseason of grinding and trying to get back to try to win it again.
That is 49ers wide receiver and soon-to-be free agent Emmanuel Sanders, speaking on losing in the Super Bowl. He is not the number one free agent that I told you about before the break that the Bills couldn't get their hands on. If they want Emmanuel Sanders, he'll probably be available. I don't see the Niners bringing him back. Deebo Samuel was phenomenal as a rookie. Second-round pick for them. They've got Marquise Goodwin still hanging around there. They've got this Kendrick Bourne guy who scored a couple of touchdowns for them. They have a really promising young third-round pick from last year that didn't get to play this season because of injury, Jalen Hurd, who is insanely athletic. He's like 6'4", insanely fast. They'll want him to be on the field, I'm sure, next season. So I'm not sure they have room for Emmanuel Sanders on a bigger contract. So maybe he's an option for the Bills as another wide receiver if they can't get their hands on an Amari Cooper or an A.J. Green type. The number one free agent on my list that I'd like to see the Bills sign this year is Yannick Ngakoue. It's incredibly young, 25 years old, the most consistent free agent. Like, there's a couple of other nice pass rushers on the edge that will be available. Shaq Barrett from Tampa led the league in sacks this past year. But he had like 6 career sacks before that. He had 6 sacks in like 4 years, and then you have 21. And that seems risky to me. Eric Armstead from San Francisco, another guy. Double-digit sacks for San Francisco this past season, but he had done pretty much nothing in the 3 years prior. So that's risky. And Ngakoue only had like 8.5 sacks last year, but he's a very well-balanced defensive end. Good against the run, a very consistent pass rusher, and he would instantly be the Bills' best defensive end. An upgrade over Shaq Lawson, a more complete defensive end than Jerry Hughes, and certainly an upgrade over a Trent Murphy. Report from about an hour ago. Jaguars reporter, let me try this name here, Matt Viderame. That's probably not right. You could hear the lack of confidence in my voice there. But anyways, he reports that it's unlikely the Jaguars let Ngakoue get to free agency. Now, Ngakoue's been unhappy with the situation in Jacksonville. He's wanted an extension. He was talking about holding out, and then he was tweeting, like, free at last at the end of the season or a couple weeks ago, that, like, he's done in Jacksonville. But this would indicate that Jacksonville would put him on the franchise tag, and actually he does report that they're leaning towards putting him on the franchise tag. That would be a big cap hit for Jacksonville. That'd be an $18 million cap hit. So they'll have the opportunity to keep him around. But should he reach free agency, which maybe this report is indicating that he won't, but if he does, I would want the Bills to go all out to get that guy because he is a stud. He is what they need at the position they need. And it would also stop them probably from drafting a defensive end in the first round. And they could focus more in on wide receiver at that point. And Greg Olsen's in town, by the way. Tight end. If you hadn't heard of him. He's, you know, he's like fifth all time in receptions for a tight end. Quick word on him when we return before we get back into the Sabres. Well, so we'll go positive to negative in the next hour, and we'll hear a little from Darren Dreger as well, who also had some things to say on the Sabres relating to the trade deadline. That's on the way next. The Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
Is this the Nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Is this the Nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Is this the Nightcap?
No, this is Patrick.
Time now for the Nightcap on WGR Sports Radio 550.
Is there like a rule of thumb on leftover chicken wings? Now, I've never thought about this because I generally don't have this problem. If there are leftover wings, you know, usually that's with like a group party. Nobody orders a single order of wings and takes three of them home. You eat the 10 wings. But if you're like with a group and or a family party and you get 50 wings and maybe 40 get eaten or 35 and there's 15 left over. Someone's taking those wings home. How long after they're gone, after they've been sitting in the fridge before you can't eat them anymore? I've never thought about this. There are wings from Super Bowl Sunday, I presume. Someone was here at the stations. Someone at WBEN, maybe. I know Derek and Kyle were here during the day before the Super Bowl. Maybe it was them. But someone ordered wings. Because there are wings still sitting in the refrigerator, and I was not going to eat them, but I saw someone out in the office here, like, eyeing them up. And I thought to myself, like, those wings have been sitting there since Sunday. Three-day-old wings? I don't know. I don't know if I'm touching them. I like chicken wings, but, again, I don't ever have this problem, because they're gone in a day, maybe. But I don't know if I'm going 3 days. I think after 2 days, you're tossing them. That's what I'm doing, I think. I don't think they have the longevity, chicken wings, when they're left over. Anyways, Greg Olsen's in town, or was in town. We have nothing to tell us that he's not in town still. We had the report from Tom Pelissero earlier today that Greg Olsen, free agent tight end, released by the Panthers a couple days ago, was in Buffalo visiting with the Bills. His first of an expected three visits with Washington and Seattle, both being on the list as well. And me and Brendan Keeney from Down the Hall WBEN, who's been hopping in here on the Nightcap once in a while here lately, on Monday, we had a conversation about Olsen, and we kind of quickly realized, like, there's really no downside to signing him. There's nothing from the Bills' perspective that this idea doesn't work for. They could use another pass catcher. They could use a big body pass catcher. And if you sign a guy like Greg Olsen, well, suddenly, to me, there is now less pressure for you to go get a number one wide receiver or an upgraded wide receiver that is big, that has that catch radius that everybody talks about, and is the guy that you could throw jump balls to. I don't really want that player all that much because I don't think they need that guy for the red zone. Now, that's more of a specialty type of player. Once in a while, you could use that. That last throw against Baltimore, you could have used a guy that could have gone up in the 50-50 catch and brought it down. In the playoff game, 10 targets to Duke Williams. I'd like, you know, 6 of those targets to be to somebody else. It's better than Duke Williams. That final heave that Josh Allen puts in the end zone on that Saturday night in New England. Allen is scrambling because he's been blitzed. It's the last play of the game. It's got to go to the end zone. He tosses it up, and who is trying to catch it with two Patriots around him? It's 5'8" Cole Beasley. Maybe Beasley's a little taller than that, but he's not tall. That's for darn sure. They need a guy that has the size. And Olsen presents that. He's not going to, you know, leap 10 feet in the air and jump over corners and safeties to get it. But for how strong he is, for how he uses his body, for having that 6'5 frame, he works for this. He does work for this. And he might be better than you could do anywhere else with this. Unless you can sign AJ Green. I think Greg Olsen's about as good as you're going to do. And look around the league. Look at the two teams that were just in the Super Bowl. They don't really have that number one wide receiver that's 6'4". San Francisco doesn't really have number one wide receiver at all. That guy is George Kittle, their tight end. Kansas City, their number one wide receiver is Tyreek Hill. Speed guy, gets open. Who do they throw it to for the 50-50 catch? That guy is Travis Kelce, their tight end. And don't get me wrong, Greg Olsen is not Travis Kelce or George Kittle at this point in his career. But he is more consistent than what a rookie Dawson Knox was giving you. And this would take some of the pressure off Dawson Knox to have to step up and be that guy for you next season. Because if you look within the organization, if they can't add that type of guy out in free agency, that big physical wide receiver, Dawson Knox is that guy because of his athleticism. And honestly, they did line him up out wide a lot this past year. They like to use him as a receiver. Bring in Greg Olsen. Now suddenly I could throw two tight ends out there if I want. I could have Olsen playing tight end. That could open up Dawson Knox to play some wide receiver maybe a little bit. Just another pass catcher, which they need. And you're not going to have to give him a long-term deal because he's only 34, or he's already 34, and he's probably, if he's not in the final year of his career, he's in one of the final years of his career. So you're not going to have to give him some big 4 or 5 year contract. And it gives you more time to find that true number one guy, I think. I think it relieves some of the pressure to do that. Now, instead of having to force like an AJ Green signing and having to give him like a 5 year contract coming off an injury at age 32, or having to overpay a Robbie Anderson, or having to give up an asset I don't want to give up to go get somebody else's, one of their top receivers, suddenly, I can just draft a kid in the back of the first round, hope that he develops into that player in a year or two when Greg Olsen walks out the door. So the idea makes perfect sense. Obviously, there's no downside to me. Now, you're left to think, and I'm left to think, would he come here? What's his motivation? I think on the surface, my first thought was, okay, this guy is going to try to win a Super Bowl. He's going to go to New England if Brady stays. He's going to go to Green Bay. He's going to go to, Kansas City doesn't make sense because of Kelce. He's going to go to Houston. He's going to go somewhere that has an elite quarterback that he thinks can get him a Super Bowl before he retires. Instead, we have kind of two things working right now. If I try to read into the teams that he's visiting with, they're all a little bit different. Two of the teams have something in common, kind of, and the other two teams have something in common, kind of. He's got different levels of motivation with each team. If he were to go to Washington, which is one of the teams on the list, well, obviously, the most important thing to him is his comfort level with his head coach. Ron Rivera, now the head coach of the Washington Redskins. Olsen and several other Panthers spoke about how great a leader Ron Rivera is and how respected he was. And Olsen, if he chooses Washington, no doubt it's just a Ron Rivera factor. And his number one motivator is not winning a Super Bowl. Because if you want to win a Super Bowl, I could probably count on one hand teams that have a lesser chance to win the Super Bowl than the Washington Redskins with Dwayne Haskins. Like, they're one of the worst teams in football. So you're not going there to win. The Seahawks are the complete opposite of that. Nothing I've read, maybe I missed something, or maybe there's a positional coach, maybe there's a guy in the front office, but nothing I've read says that Olsen's got any connection to guys in Seattle. But why would he go to Seattle? Well, they have Russell Wilson, and they're one of the best teams in football. They were an inch away from having home field advantage throughout the NFC playoffs, and I think if they had got that home field advantage, they would have been in the Super Bowl. That's how big a difference that NFC playoff picture was in Week 17. He goes there. They need a tight end. Will Disley was great for them last year in Seattle, but he got hurt for the second year in a row with the season-ending injuries. So you can't really count on him to stay healthy. So he'll have a role there. They're the best team that he's picked out. And they have a chance to win a Super Bowl. So winning with Seattle. So you got the coach and familiarity in Washington. You've got winning in Seattle. And then there's the Bills smack dab in the middle. And they kind of middle it here. Because they're not the contender that Seattle is. They're not. They're just not. The Seahawks are rightfully so one of the Super Bowl favorites going into next year. I think I saw their top five in the odds. I'll double check on that real quick here. But the Bills, they're 14th, which is pretty good. It would be the craziest thing in the world next year if the Bills won the Super Bowl. It probably feels that way because we're in Buffalo, but crazier things have happened in sports. Like, Leicester City won the Premier League a couple years ago. They were, like, 5,000-to-1 favorite, or underdogs to win that. The Bills are, like, you know, 30-to-1. They are about 100 times. That is not good math, is it? Maybe it is good math. Yeah, they're 100 times more likely, more so, to win their championship than the Leicester City example I just mentioned. So he could certainly look at the Bills and think, all right, if I go there, who knows what's going to happen with Brady? I'm going to have a chance to win, and maybe I'm not going to have as good a chance to win in Seattle, but I'm not going to be going as far from where I've been living. It's not like Buffalo is all that close to Carolina, but it's a lot closer than Seattle is. And I still get that familiarity factor. I know Sean McDermott from Carolina. I know Brandon Bean from Carolina. I know Rob Boris, the tight end coach. I was trying to think of his name. Pretty sure that's right. Like 99% sure that that's the Bills tight end coach, Boris. He was his tight end coach in Chicago. Apparently, he's close with Ken Dorsey, which, you know, makes sense. They weren't teammates at the University of Miami, but they just missed each other. They both played the same school. Ken Dorsey's the quarterback coach here in Buffalo. He's got four connections. And, again, you're not picking Buffalo to win the Super Bowl, but they at least are not, like, they're respectable. They're a playoff contender, at least. Washington, you don't get that at all. You don't get any part of that. So I do believe Buffalo should be appealing to Greg Olsen, assuming that familiarity is a motivator to him. That's what they'll really have to sell him on. They will have to sell him on familiarity, and that will have to be a big motivator for him. And then from there, it should be an easy sell to sell Greg Olsen on the Bills being a bigger contender than Washington. That's for darn sure. The Seahawks, by the way, are plus 950 to win the Super Bowl. The Bills, if the Bills' odds gone down, they were plus 3,500 a couple of days ago. I don't see them. Interesting. No, the Seahawks, sorry, plus 2,000. That's why I was looking at NFC title odds. The Seahawks are plus 2,000. The Bills are plus 3,500. Washington, by the way, dead last, plus 10,000. So the Bills would be in this pretty much roughly three times more likely to win the Super Bowl than the Washington Redskins. So I think they can get this done. And should I read anything into the Bills being his first visit? Maybe I shouldn't. But maybe they'll have a chance here to not let him leave the building. Mario Williams-esque, where that guy just, you know, hung out here. Did they just locked him in a building for 3 days, trying to keep him here? Maybe they can keep Greg Olsen in town. Maybe they can get that done before he visits anywhere else. Who knows? But I like the idea a lot. I hope it gets done because I do think it will help the Bills offense next season for sure. 803-0550 is the phone number. If you got a Bills free agent idea, you could toss it my way. But we're going to switch back. We're going to switch gears. Unless anybody that's hanging on hold wants to talk some football, we will switch gears back to hockey. Sabres and Red Wings tomorrow. I got a couple of stats for you on how bad the Red Wings are. You think things are going bad in Buffalo? Detroit is one of the worst teams. It might be the worst team of my lifetime. They have 28 points. It is February 5th. They have 28 points. Ugh. So bad. If they don't win that game tomorrow, it's going to be a real mess. You think fans are angry now? You lose to Detroit at home. Everybody hide. Anyways, we'll get into the Sabres right after this. 803-0550 is the phone number. It's the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase on WGR.
I know that market is white hot right now, especially after a demoralizing loss to the Colorado Avalanche. But what I can tell you, basically the same speech that I've given the instigators week by week now, and it's that I talk to a lot of managers, a lot of NHL contacts. He's trying to make something happen and has been for a long, long time.
TSN's Darren Dreger with the instigators, with Howard and Jeremy this morning. Trying to get something done is not getting something done, though. And the issue that I have with that being used as an excuse for why the team is not performing and why deals haven't been made is the deals, we shouldn't have gotten to this point where you had to be making trades during the season. We shouldn't have got to a point where it was November and, oh, they need to trade for a forward. That's not a spot you want to be in because, right, I don't doubt that for a second. It's probably very hard to make trades once the season gets going. We've seen kind of evidence of that so far, haven't we? They had a year and a half to add to that forward group. Especially the second line center position. And really, they've all been misses. Sherry was kind of a miss. VC's been a miss. Johansson's been okay. But he's your idea for second line center. That's not going that well. So in a way, that's a miss. Given what you tried to make him. If he was your second line right wing, fine. He'd be doing probably pretty fine. But I don't know. I can't get on board with that. I cannot get on board with that. Deals have been made in this league. I brought up Michael Granlund earlier in the show. He got traded between Ryan O'Reilly being traded and now. That guy could have slotted right in as your second line center. And they'd be in a playoff race, probably. They're not that far away. It might feel like they're that far away, but I believe that if they just had like a 50, Bulldog has said this, if they had a 50-point center on this team right now, if you just dropped a 50-point center in, they'd be in a playoff race because that is the foundation of so many of their issues. And the fact that there just hasn't been a deal, trying is not doing. You got to pull the trigger on something. And you got to do that in the summer. Or the entire season before. Last year's trade deadline. The summer before that. After you had traded O'Reilly. There was a month. There was more than a month. There was 2 months after you traded O'Reilly. 3 months, actually. July 1st. So July, August, September. You had 3 months. Nothing got done. I don't know. I don't know what I'm supposed to want. Robbie Fabry got traded. He's an all right top six player, isn't he? Like, we don't want to think about these guys that got dealt because we just kind of forget about it. Like Vladislav Namestnikov, He goes from the Rangers to Ottawa. Pretty good winger. And he has some center ability. So, again, you don't want to have to make him your second-line center because you've got Johansson doing that already. But you could have done that. Nikita Gusev. Third-round pick. Is it risky because the guy, Nikita Gusev, if you hadn't heard of him, KHL player, comes over to the NHL, didn't want to play for Vegas, or Vegas didn't have the cap space to fit him in. Didn't have a giant contract, but they're just way up against the cap. They had to trade Colin Miller because of it. You couldn't have traded a third-round pick for Nikita Gusev? No? None of this? You couldn't have done any of this? Nazem Kadri? Not even Nazem Kadri. The other guy in the Nazem Kadri trade. If you remember me on that day, which you probably don't, it's not like an important moment at all. But when the Toronto Maple Leafs traded Nazem Kadri and got Tyson Barry and Alex Kerfoot, that drove me insane. I had talked about Alex Kerfoot maybe the day before as a potential like bridge second line center while Casey Mittelstadt gets more accustomed to the league. And Kerfoot, again, I'm not talking about some superstar player here, but you know, he's got a point almost every other game this year. He's like on a 40-point pace. Like they need guys like that. And he was a throw into a deal. Why couldn't you have done that? Why couldn't you have figured out a way to get him? He was available. Alex Galchenyuk got traded for like nothing. Actually, no. Galchenyuk got traded for Kessel. Now he would probably get traded for nothing. But you want to try that? Because that might be risky too. But you're at a point where you need to take risk on to fill that spot. You're not just going to get a superstar dropped in your lap. You need to take a shot at something. JT Miller got traded. He's a really good player. He's a legitimately good player, and you knew he was a legitimately good player. And he got traded for a conditional late first-round pick from Tampa to Vancouver. Couldn't have done that? I don't know. You can just go trade by trade here. There are countless examples of trades that have been made in the league, mostly going back to the summer, but again, that's where they should have been making their trades. There are countless examples of moves other teams have made that would have helped the Sabres, not even just this season. Stretch it back to last year, because we knew a little bit after that 10-game win streak that they needed help, and they thought they were fine. They thought they were good enough to keep going. They didn't address the issues they had last year. They still didn't address those issues this year. I'm talking about the forward group. They made some moves on the blue line, but whatever. It's tough. It's tough to keep going round and round on this stuff, but that's where we're at. Let's hear from the GM. Was going to play Darren Dreger, but figured better to play the actual the GM's comments. Jason Botterill was on with the Open the Bulldog yesterday, live at 716, and you know, he tries to make a defense for what's going on here right now. It's tough to do that. So I'll just play it for you. Here is the GM's comments with Open the Bulldog yesterday.
It's time to talk Sabres hockey on WGR Sports Radio 550. Now, Buffalo Sabres GM Jason Botterill joins Shope and the Bulldog. Brought to you by Paul William Belts, your power of attorney, and by Fallsview Casino Resort, Niagara Falls, Canada.
Mike Shope and the Bulldog, Sabres GM Jason Botterill to join us momentarily. Quickly, a reminder, this was brought up this morning as well. You might be wondering where Paul Hamilton is. He is out with an upper body injury. I mean, he's a hockey man.
Mm-hmm.
So Paul is doing well, and he'll be back on the station soon. But Pat Malacaro, Brian Koziol, Brayton Wilson all filling in. It takes three to fill in for Paul. So we wish Paul well, and he'll be back soon. All right. Jason, nice to see you again.
Thank you for having me on.
So I would say in the last couple of weeks, maybe it's home games, the losses last week, maybe it's the Bills ending. The knives are out on the Sabres a little bit. The fans are like, I feel like it's louder than it was before. Maybe it's just later on in the season. I wonder, like, to what extent you maybe agree with that or have noticed that, and how are you feeling? How do you think this is all going?
Well, I think it's a situation where you have your All-Star break, you have a time off. It's a reflection on where the season's at. And let's be totally honest. We had two games last week against Ottawa and Montreal that we had to win. We should win. And from day one of this season, Ralph and myself have talked about having a home ice presence. I think you look at our home ice record, we've done a fairly good job with that. But in crucial situations, when you have an opportunity to have a team come in that's below you in the standings, you have to capitalize on it. So, yeah, I can understand our fans' frustration standpoint. Our organization's frustrated by that. My dialogue with Terry and Kim is frustrated from that. And as an organization, for us to take a step forward, we got to make sure that we capitalize on games like that.
We had a caller on Wednesday. Bulldog should talk about it. I wasn't there. Jeremy lost his mom, and we were at the wake and the funeral. We took turns going. And this caller, like, was just really hot about ownership, and the thing went, like, nationwide. And a part of it that I want to ask you about is the ownership piece, and you just yep. referenced the Pegulas. I think some fans wonder just where they're at in all this, you know, like, especially the way it started and big talk before you were here about plans for the organization. No doubt a lot of money has been spent, but there aren't results yet. What can you tell fans about Terry and Kim Pegula's feelings about this and, you know, what they want to see get done?
Well, to put it bluntly, my conversations with Terry and Kim, they're frustrated with the results. They want better results. And our dialogue, we're in constant dialogue. The dialogue goes to what are the solutions? What are we doing to get better? But from a management standpoint, it's one of the reasons I came to this organization, was the resources are given to us to have success. Whether you want to, from a roster standpoint, to opportunity for developing our scouting staff, development staff, Rochester, they give us the resources. If you're frustrated with the results, hey, challenge management. But what our ownership has given us, they give us the tools to have success.
Do you feel some urgency because of that? Like, for right now, like, to do something, maybe, I don't want to say out of character necessarily, but just something impactful and dramatic?
There's always urgency to do something. From day one on the job, you want urgency to get the job done and to move the organization forward. And I think from, you look at our team, you look at portions of our season, we've played very well. But over the course of the bulk of it, the majority of the season, we haven't gotten the results we wanted. And you can talk about the development of our star players, how they're having some careers or years, but the entire group, mm-hmm. we haven't done it well enough. So, yeah, I've talked to you about this before. We're always looking to improve the team. Am I going to do something drastic because it's imperative we do something right now? We're always looking to do something, but I'm not going to harm what this organization needs to. And it's about developing, and making it long-term important, but also have short-term success for our group. And as my job as general manager, I have to take a longer-term picture. But my dialogue right now, my focus right now, is to work with Ralph and, hey, what do we have to do to get this roster performing better? What do we have to do to some of our players who haven't hit their norms for NHL goals or points? What do we have to do from that chemistry structure to get this going in the right direction?
Jason, how much of a better season than this did you expect? Like, the cap being where it is, like, you've got contracts here that maybe you've wanted to get out of in one way or another. Like, it's mostly the same team as last year. You've added a few guys, but it's mostly, like, very few guys have been taken off the roster. So, logically, one might expect the kind of the same points total, right? The same place in the standings, and that's kind of where you're headed. Are you surprised that this team isn't better?
I think you're looking for development in your young players. You're looking for everyone to take that step, and I think this team has shown in October, and the difference from this team, I say, compared to last year, after our 10-game win streak, we never really got playing again and sort of found our game, as Ralph would like to say, type of thing. And I thought this year, whether it was the start of November, or excuse me, start of December, you know, played Nashville, St. Louis, Edmonton, Islanders, you look right before the break, having wins against Vegas, Dallas, you know, having a good effort in Nashville, I felt we were making progress from those areas there. So, yeah, like it's a situation where you feel there's more to be given from this group, and there's more situations where, yeah, we kept some players. Younger players are developing from that standpoint. We did bring in players. Hey, a guy like Brendan Marteau is here for the entire season. A young player like Henry Jokiharju comes into the group. I think Linus Allmark has taken a big step on as our goalie. We brought in Marcus Johansson. So we brought some players in that we felt could help us move forward.
Do you feel like there could be another layer of management here? I know you've got a staff below you. I don't need to read the depth chart, but assistants and scouts and amateur scouts and pro scouts and all that. Between you and the Pegulas, like an experienced hockey person, like is that something that you would welcome, like another tier of management, another set of eyes, another experienced person to sort of help steer this?
Well, that's why I brought Randy Sexton onto my staff. He's a former general manager in the league. That's why I brought in Steve Greeley to be sort of our player personnel guy. I wanted to make sure that I surrounded myself with people that brought in different ideas. I brought in Randy because he was with me in Pittsburgh and sort of knew that model. Steve had success winning a Stanley Cup with the Los Angeles Kings. Had been around the Eichel family in Boston University, seen how things worked in New York too. So to me, there's always different ways to develop a team, and I wanted to have a sort of a diverse group that came in from there. I love the fact that my interaction is directly with Terry and Kim. I respect that and certainly think that's a strength of our organization. And I think the fact that we've built people around there, I have strong ideas and strong people providing ideas to me. And what I like about our group is they're not afraid to challenge me when on different things. I don't have a bunch of yes guys around me and stuff. And so I feel comfortable with the management group we have, and we understand that we have to continue to be better.
With Sabres GM Jason Botterill, so and we've talked about this along the way here many times, when you have a team that's on the outside of the playoffs, especially with it kind of being your mantra and even, I think, your reputation for the most part coming here in this word development, I don't know how that's going, really. Like, I know Mittelstadt was sent down and you've lost Thompson. Who else is, like, out of the – who else is down there that's maybe somebody you would expect to have be on this team next year? Or if you end up selling, I mean, you've got several forwards that might make room. You've got very few under contract here. Like, do you have reinforcements?
Look, we've utilized – you know, two of my three high draft picks on forwards to come into our system. You know, we feel that Sam Reinhart continues to develop as a player. Jack Eichel continues to develop as a player. You've seen Victor Olofsson make the jump this year. But, look, where we're focused on right now is we have a group of players that have our proven NHL scorers who aren't up to their NHL norms right now for goals. And whether it's chemistry, lines, that's what we're trying to work on right now to get more out of them because we think there's another level that they can get to.
Okay. How is Mittelstadt doing?
Mittelstadt, saw him down on Friday down in Rochester. I think he's done a great job down there. And he's gone down with the right attitude of being engaged, working very closely with Chris Taylor. You see him in power play, penalty killing, and all situations out there. And he's starting to produce more from an offensive standpoint. You look at not just his offensive numbers, but what he's creating from a chances standpoint, it's top of the leagues from that situation. Very similar to what Tage Thompson was doing at the start of the year. So we've been very happy with Casey's maturity in the situation, and I think they've won five in a row here in Rochester, and he's certainly a big part of that.
Is the plan, if there is a hard plan, I realize these things can always change, the trade deadline, yep, injuries, his performance, but would you be inclined to just sort of let him cook down there for the rest of the year, enjoy a playoff run, and then take a new run at the NHL next fall, or could he be a call-up candidate?
Well, I think it's always a situation we're looking at, but I think you touched a bit on the playoff experience. Playoff experience needs to happen for a lot of players in our organization, and I think that's extremely key. And that's a big step in anyone's development, getting that experience, whether it's at the National Hockey League level, American Hockey League, just playing in those type of games.
Has Ukko-Pekka Luukkonen played down there yet? I have not.
Yep.
I
didn't he played up. Last Friday against Syracuse, won that game, had a stopped a penalty shot in the first period. So obviously disappointing with Allmark going down up here, but it is an opportunity for Jonas to come up here, and it's an opportunity for UPL to gain more starts in Rochester.
Would you think he could get a look at some point here, or do you think like
the next step in his direct, you know, his development? Look, everything was taking a step back because of the offseason surgery.
Right.
We understood that, but you got to look at the long term for a talented young kid like that. And he's done his job at the ECHL level. I think it's great that now he's taken the role of working with Hammond in Rochester, and the next step is for him to, one, get games in there and then take over that role and stuff to be a go-to goal at the American Hockey League level.
There he is, Sabres GM Jason Botterill. There is a few more minutes to that interview, about 5 more minutes or so. If you want to hear the rest of it, you can do that at WGR550.com and the radio.com app. Last call on the nightcap after this. Got Blackhawks and Bruins on in here on national TV. I am sick and tired of the Blackhawks being on national TV, but Robin Leonard is playing, and he is playing out of his mind. Two incredible stops in a row. One of the guys that got away that could certainly have used him the past 2 years, playing at a Vezina level, which, you know, he was always knocking on the door on, but people didn't want to hear that because he was traded for a first-round pick. Anyways, last call in the nightcap after this.
Toronto's looking for a few things now. Priority was a right shot defenseman or a top four, preferably top pairing guy. And it would take Kasperi Kapanen or Andreas Janssen and something else, and maybe something beyond that. Especially if you're talking about a defenseman like Ristolainen, potentially. And I'm not connecting the two. It's just that I think that's the type of defenseman that the Toronto Maple Leafs would covet. The names that have been thrown out in relation to Toronto have been Matt Dumba and Josh Manson.
Darren Dreger, TSN, on with Howard and Jeremy this morning. Yeah, the Leafs are out of a playoff spot, and they are in trouble because Frederik Andersen is out for a little bit with a neck injury, which is always tricky to begin with, so who knows how long he'll be out for. And they don't have the goaltending. They're not going to have the goaltending to make it. They're going to have to add someone. Maybe it's Georgiev from the Rangers, who's been long rumored to be a Leaf target. Because otherwise, it's Michael Hutchinson and someone near named Kashmir? K-A-S-I-M-I-R. Kashmir. Kakasuo. Sure. I don't know. He's also on the Leafs right now, too. That's their goaltending situation. That's not great. And they don't have the blue line playing at a level right now where they can afford to have any woes in net. Like, they need their goalie to bail them out once in a while. And I don't know where the Leafs go from here. Like, they are kind of trapped. They have three defensemen under contract for next year. Rasmus Sandin, who's a nice young prospect here. Martin Marinson, who's just a guy. And Justin Hull, who's just a guy. That's it. Travis Dermott's an RFA. And then their top three defensemen, really, in Tyson Barry, Jake Muzzin, Cody Ceci, are all UFAs. I did forget about Morgan Riley. He's out IR right now, so he'd be their top defenseman. So they Morgan Riley add to the mix there, but they need to build an entire blue line, and they only have $13 million in cap space to do it. Good luck with that, Toronto. And for this year, you're in trouble because they're out of a playoff spot. I think Florida's a better team. Florida is a better all-around team to me than the Toronto Maple Leafs, especially when Bobrovsky is playing well, and he's been playing well as of late. So once he figures things out on a consistent basis, Florida is really good up front. They have a really good blue line, and they have a really good goaltender. Toronto is just, you know, loaded up front, and then they just try to plug away at everything else. So Toronto might miss the playoffs, which would be crazy. All that talent they have, three first-round exits, and then you miss the playoffs? I mean, who's getting fired there if that happens? Or maybe Sheldon Keefe just doesn't hold on to his job as head coach. I don't know what would happen. Anyways, that's going to do it for me tonight. Thanks, everybody, for listening to tonight's show. I did mention we only played part of Jason Botterill in the last segment. If you want to hear the rest of that, or anything from today's show, Darren Dreger, or from today on the station, Darren Dreger, Ralph Kruger, Howard and Jeremy, Show Up in the Bulldog, Boneville's Live, The Instigators. You can find all of it on demand, this show too, at WGR550.com and the radio.com app. Thanks everybody for listening. Last show of the week for me. We got Sabre games tomorrow hosting the Red Wings, Friday hosting the Rangers, or at the Rangers. So I will speak to you next week. This has been the Nightcap with Joe DiBiase here on WGR.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.